Hello, this is Dr. Pechenik talking to you once again in Dr. Steve Pechenik's talk, and today I want to talk to you a little bit about what will happen to Bashar Assad, and most probably he will go to a little town in Russia called Barvikha. It's in Kyrgyzstan. The name of the town is spelled B-A-R-V-I-K-H-A, and I pronounce it Barvikha, Russia. But I want you to listen to something that I wrote. Barvikha, Russia, a luxurious haven for tyrants, deposed leaders, terrorists, dictators, is a possible next home for Bashar Assad. Thanks again to the courtesy and the alacrity of the Russian leaders, especially who have always been able to clean up the mess of our holy triangle of dysfunctional performance, the American CIA, the American military, and our American president. They have always cleaned up the mess of our present president, Obama, and our three past presidents, Mr. Slick Bill Willie Clinton, Bush Jr., and now Obama. Very rarely is Vladimir Putin portrayed as a sagacious, cooperative world leader. But time and time again, Putin keeps coming to this functional U.S. CIA, military, and POTUS, repeated mystery inactions overseas. He's come repeatedly to bail us out in ways that very few of us really know. You want to start a war in Afghanistan that you don't have a chance of winning? Why don't we pay Putin for the right to transit through Russia and use his helicopters to fight the non-existent terrorists in the non-existent government called the Karzai government? Karzai, by the way, was appointed in the house where I was at Zalmay Khalilzad by a future ambassador of Afghanistan and Iraq, and he was a delicatessen owner in Silver Springs who has a severe bipolar disorder. This is the man who we have put in charge of a dysfunctional government that is totally corrupt. But who bails us out and provides us with access to Afghanistan, provides us with the helicopters, provides us with the intelligence that Condoleezza Rice didn't have in the Afghanistan war and we didn't have? It's Vladimir Putin. Once again, Putin, for a reasonable sum of money, anything is reasonable when you've wasted trillions of hard-earned American dollars in useless, dangerous wars just to get elected for what I call the Holy Trinity of Deception. Slick Willie, Bush Jr., and Obama. Whether it's a war in Iraq, a war in Libya, or a war in Afghanistan, Putin has the weapons. Putin has the helicopters. Putin has the personnel. And the case of our ignorant Comdi and our ignorant CIA and our ignorant Special Forces intel capability, Putin provides you for a sum of money, human intel, or what we call human, H-U-M-I-N-T, to implement your misbegotten, dysfunctional war plans, and even provides a credible exit strategy, which we rarely think about, as you recall in Bush Jr.'s disastrous attack in Iraq and our Obama's disastrous attack in Afghanistan. But leave it up to Putin. He can solve your problems, and he has, quite frankly. It's the exit strategy that really fascinates me. At most of the times, I've rarely seen any world leader come forth as many times as Putin has and bailed our presidents of the United States out of our miseries and our problems that we, the U.S. taxpayers, have to pay for in blood, money, wounded warriors, and misbegotten adventures. Several years ago, when the U.S. government had problems with our bases in Kyrgyzstan, thanks to our incompetent Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, and his deputy, Mr. Wolfowitz, and the neocons, Zalmay Khalilzad, Steve Hadley, and, of course, Richard Pearl, the corrupt, abusive tyrant, Askar Akayev, then president of Kyrgyzstan, his name is spelled A-S-K-A-R, A-K-A-Y-E-V, he's located in Central Asia. He was overthrown by, quote, democratic processes, which I think our CIA initiated but didn't really know how to put down. So we'll call him Askar of Kyrgyzstan, go? A corrupt, dictatorial, suppressive individual. Did he go to New York City? No. That was too congested. Not elite enough. There wasn't enough space for what he wanted. He wanted some like-minded tyrants like himself, corrupt, deceitful, and suppressive. So we sent him to Barhivka, B-A-R-H-I-V-K, Russia. And this little town is a small town consisting of villas, luxury boutique shops built all around the sanitarium where Akayev of Kyrgyzstan stayed now and is home to deposed leaders and members of his family. It's a privileged life, unlike many of our lives. It is filled with other deposed leaders from all over the world, where Putin has allowed them to come into Russia quietly and live a very, very luxurious life. Number one, they can enjoy each other's company and talk about suppression, torture, tyranny, and all the wonderful things that they did in order to acquire wealth and power. They can eat and drink and stroll around fashionable shopping centers, which include, listen to this, Gucci, Ralph Lauren, and Dolce & Gabbana. Now, these stores would be of particular interest to Dr. Assad's wife, because Bashir Assad will be going there, and Mrs. Assad is going to be a fashion plate and has been a fashion plate. And her name is Asama al-Assad, who's known to be a fashion maven and a shopaholic. Now, what better place to go to than to Russia in this luxurious little villa where she can shop all day long and talk about the miseries of democracy and suppressing people than in this small town where Putin has afforded all of the world tyrants an opportunity to live together in peace and in harmony and in seclusion. As for the last-minute preparations, you see, most tyrants can't prepare for a formal exit. Very often, it's a last-minute preparation. Putin has been very clever, and he's been able to provide, along with his KGB, FSB in this case, and many other entrepreneurial Russians, 11th-hour escape plans, and they're very good at this, and I'm quite serious. They provide a private jet, they provide limousines and bodyguards, all, of course, for a certain price. Why not? He is the ultimate capitalist and the most successful capitalist that I know about. Putin really understood the meaning of exploitive capitalism. How are American robber barons, including Gould, Whitney, Forbes, Delano, and many others, would have been exceedingly proud of Putin. This man who came out of the KGB, came out of the Stasi, and was trained by two of the world's most formidable spy masters. The first one, of course, was Marcus Wolf, who was the head of the Stasi in East Germany. That's why Putin lived in Dresden and was in Berlin and speaks beautiful, beautiful German, and was trained by the most formidable spy of all, Marcus Wolf. He was then transferred to the more indomitable and more fearsome Andropov, whom I had the chance to meet, not a very pleasant man, but an exceedingly bright man, who took him under his wings and made him eventually the KGB. But the narrative is he worked for liberals and came up through a democratic process. Absolute nonsense. The CIA and our intelligence community worked with him using the Chechens and a hostage situation to put him into power. But that's another narrative, because today I don't come to damn Putin. I come to praise him in the true sense of the word. You see, from my point of view, Putin is running a humanitarian mission for all the untoward collateral damages of U.S.'s unnecessary incursions into Syria, Libya, Iraq, Afghanistan, Yemen, Sudan, Somalia, and guess what? 30 other non-national security threat areas, which were recently designated as terrorist outposts, where dictators and terrorists reside. Now, you and I know there are no more terrorists. Anytime we decide to go use our military forces in 34 different areas in Africa, we call them terrorists. In the same way that the Afrikaners called Mandela and the ANC terrorists, but now the terrorists have become the statesmen. In the same way that the English called Menachem Begin a terrorist in the Irgun Tzvei, but now he became the statesman of Israel. And in the same way, the English called the Egyptian leader Sadat a terrorist, but he became a leader. So the word terrorist is not a profile, it's not a particular indicator, it's just a rationalization for our use of troops overseas so that we can go and invade various countries for different resources and different power moves, none of which is relevant to our national security. So while our wounded warriors, who are sitting in the VA and barely can get medical attention, thanks to General Chinseki, who is a totally incompetent leader of the Veterans Administration, and I have repeatedly requested his resignation over the years, but I've been told by our military leaders that he's doing a wonderful job. Nevertheless, General Chinseki, who was never a great general, but was wounded in combat, he has never been able to provide all those wounded soldiers with hemicorpectomies, lost organs, damaged brains, post-traumatic stress syndrome, organic brain damage, all of those wounded soldiers whom we've sent to Iraq and Afghanistan just because our American civilian presidents, the CIA, and our military generals wanted to try an incursion in various countries like Afghanistan and Iraq with no outcome, no purpose, other than to secure possibly some pipelines. They sit there in their beds, in their urine, in their feces, without medical care, without any care, without any mention from any civilian about taking care of the VA, and with an incompetent leader like General Chinseki, while the despots, now, this is the interesting contrast, while the despots in Barfika, in this little town where all the despots live, they literally go around, and thanks to Putin, they go around and they buy a Bentley. And they buy a flying sperm model Bentley. And in the first year of exile, you can live exceedingly well if you do the things that we say you shouldn't do, i.e. be suppressive, dictatorial, corrupt, and torturous. That is exactly how you become successful. And if you need an intercessor, you ask Vladimir Putin. But our dysfunctional military leaders who sent our men to war, in other words, our generals like Tommy Franks, Abizaid, and many others in the Air Force and in the Navy, Marshall Mullen, they all retire with huge benefits and plans, and they retire at Tampa, Hilton Head, San Diego. But they, too, are no fools. What do? What they do is they get their pension, which is usually about $180,000, and then they get consulting fees that amount to millions of dollars working for Northrop Grumman, Lockheed Martin, L3 Communication. For example, one of the most irresponsible generals I have ever met, and I've met him twice, is General Stanley McChrystal, who shot his mouth off about how great a general he was. He was also involved in the assassination and killing of one of our great wounded warriors, Mr. Tillman, the famous football player, and then came back to lord his grandiose accomplishments in creating drones and high-value target assassination, and was so proud of it at the Council on Foreign Relations that I found it despicable that the Council stood up and cheered him on as if it were a Nazi rally for Goebbels and Goering. So I quit. But General McChrystal, and his disingenuous way of saying, oh, I'm just a poor kid, has opened up, one of those consulting firms where he can tell you about management, style, and tactics, like many of our other generals, and like Mr. Chertoff, who developed the entire security system for our 9/11, and has hired all of our CIA operatives like Mr. Charles Adler. But don't worry, because Putin still comes forth in the foreground and offers a far more transparent and far more entrepreneurial attitude towards war and the post-war era. Why start a war? For Putin, there's no need for that. The Russians knew what it meant to fight in World War II. They lost 40 to 50 million people. They knew what it meant to fight in Bosnia, Herzegovina. They lost. So Putin, a very smart, sagacious businessman, decided there's no percentage in fighting a war. Instead, let's supply all the necessary equipment for the war, helicopters, weapons, AK-47s are always the favorite. The helicopters, they go up to 13,000 feet. You see, my dear friends, we don't use American helicopters in Afghanistan because they can't get up to 13 to 15,000 feet. And ironically, we use Russian helicopters, the very same helicopters that we supposedly shot down in Charlie Wilson's war, another fictional narrative that lauds the great accomplishments of our dysfunctional CIA. Believe me, I was involved in the takedown of the Soviet Union, and the CIA played a very, very small part. Least of all was the RPGs. But let's go on. Putin not only supplies the helicopters, as I said, the AK-47s, but he supplies the bandages, and more importantly, he charges you, the American public, and our military, because our military can't get through the transit point to Afghanistan without going through Russia. And what does he do? He charges you to go through Russia and get into Afghanistan. So our great military leaders from CENTCOM and SOCOM and the Special Forces have to pay Putin money in order to fight in Afghanistan. Now, how do you beat somebody like that? Not only do you need to get to the war, so you got to pay him for that. Once you get to the war, you got to pay him for the equipment, then you got to pay him for the personnel, and you got to pay him for the intelligence. Now tell me that Putin isn't a real capitalist, far more of a capitalist and far more brave and entrepreneurial than our own military generals who really don't know how to create a business. Because for the most part, I'm going to tell you a little secret. When you're a 3- and 4-star general, no matter whether you're in the military, Air Force, Army, Air Force, Navy, you're really in a communist system. Everything is taken care of for you. Your health, your benefits, your schooling, and you don't have to think at all. All you have to do is just follow orders and maybe once or twice get into combat, but very rarely, and go to as many schools as you can that we can pay you for to take courses that you will never use or understand. But for the most part, you're really quite ineffectual in the battlefield. Putin understood that. So what does Putin do? He says, well, I'm going to make money from our incompetent generals. And that's what he's done. He's seen our incompetent CIA. He said, fine, you can't provide the intelligence, I'll provide it for you. He saw our incompetent exit strategy. That means our policymakers in the White House, people like Rice, Donlan, Brannon. Once again, you have this incompetent Irish Catholic man who started with Bill Clinton, goes through Bush Jr. and writing to Obama, the most dysfunctional individual I've ever met, who killed about 19 of our soldiers in Saudi Arabia, was involved in 9/11, but nobody said a word, and was involved in the torture scenes in Afghanistan and Iraq, and prides himself on being a deputy counterterrorism expert. He's never been an expert in anything other than in drinking and what we call bullshitting. But let's not get too far afield. So Putin provides all of these excellent services to our dysfunctional military and civilian government and intelligence. So what happens then? Why am I so interested in this little town? Basically, what it tells you about is that, number one, if this is a lie about Bashar Assad and that Putin's allowed him to leave and exit because we don't really have any strategy. Don't ever fool yourself that Hillary Clinton knew what she was doing in Syria, or the CIA knew what they were doing in Syria, or Susan Rice, or Samantha Powers, who has no experience in the field and can spout all the democratic nonsense you want, talks about genocide. They funded the CIA and our paramilitary units to make sure that Bashar Assad was overthrown, so that they had no idea where to send him, but Putin took over. So if that's the case with Putin, then let's go back to other dictators. Well, as you know from my previous logs and what I said 10 years ago, Osama bin Laden was dead. That was a narrative that was false, and it's been proven over 10 years. Now, I don't want to shock you, but the second narrative that was also false that Bush Jr. created, along with Cheney, was that Saddam Hussein was hung on a trial by his own peers. And how did you know that? Because there's literally a video from a video camera in the court which showed him hung, and Bush Jr., a great genius, often called the morons of morons, said, "This is so shameful that somebody would take a picture of Saddam Hussein being hung." Well, as you well know, Bush Jr. can't stop lying. He, like Bill Clinton, are pathological liars, as we have Hillary Clinton, and we have Obama now in the really pantheon of pathological liars. So what happened to Saddam Hussein? I can guarantee you my professional 30-year history in taking over regimes and taking out world leaders that nothing happened to Saddam Hussein. He, in fact, was probably sent to this very small town in Kyrgyzstan because it's not very far from Iraq. Isn't that a surprise? So we don't kill the world leaders. We didn't kill Noriega. We didn't kill Idi Amin. We sent him to Saudi Arabia. We sent Noriega not to prison, but we sent him to Spain and France, where he had chateaus. I know you don't know that, but I know that, because I had to make the plans for Noriega's exit with two planes, because he couldn't have his wife and his mistress on the same plane, plus the gold, because the CIA was not that smart. And I had to, once again, work against the CIA. So let's go back to Saddam Hussein, who was ostensibly hung. Well, he wasn't hung. And what happened to him is he probably, with his sons and his family, went out to Kyrgyzstan, or where in the first war he was sent over, and some of his assets were sent to Tanzania, as I was told, about $10 billion. Now, when we send these dictators away after our boys have been killed and maimed, at your dollars, our dollars, trillions of dollars being wasted on wars we didn't need, these dictators live a wonderful life in Barvika, Russia. So where did Saddam go? I will bet you any amount of money he's probably in Barvika, Russia, in Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, or Tajikistan. Why? Because Putin once again understood our inability to execute and have an exit strategy. He understands this all too well. So then the issue is, well, by what rights do we leave a adversary or a dictator alive? There is a rule that's implicit in Western culture and in the United States, which is called the divine right of kings or the rule of kings, where we, in fact, do not kill our opposition. But in order to get them out and in order to have a fancy, nice story or a narrative that's complete, like the Osama bin Laden fairy tale, we say we attacked him like the SEALs did not, and then we create a movie like Catherine Bigelow's boring, boring film. Let me assure you, I did see it, and as a member of the Academy, it is one of the most boring films that I and many others have said also. Not only is it not true, but we would never have killed Osama bin Laden because he died of Marfan's. Again, Saddam Hussein did not die and was not hung. He went to Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, and Tajikistan. Well, then you'll say to me, oh, come on. Then you're going to tell me Gaddafi wasn't killed. Lo and behold, I'm telling you again, and I said it the day that he was overthrown, he was not killed. The pictures that you saw were doctored pictures by, again, our military intelligence and our CIA, all of whom did a very sloppy job. The reason for that is Gaddafi, there was no reason to kill him or his children because he had been working for us for many, many years, and he had been a client of Goldman Sachs. As a matter of fact, Goldman Sachs made such a big blunder of $1.4 billion with Gaddafi that they offered him 4 to 5% of Goldman Sachs itself. So where did Gaddafi go? I can assure you he did not go to Barvika, Russia, for the simple reason it's too cold, it's not his culture. But where Gaddafi did go, and I'll put my entire reputation on it, and the military knows that I'm correct, as well as the CIA, he went among the Tuaregs, T-U-A-R-E-G, in sub-Sahara, Libya, and Chad. Why? Because he didn't have to go anywhere but into the deserts of Libya and further south in the sub-Saharan region, where we don't have to worry about anybody finding or seeing Gaddafi and his sons and his family. Why? Because the Tuaregs have been a very loyal tribe, and Gaddafi has been very loyal to the Tuaregs. And contrary to the narrative that was created by CNN, British intelligence, CIA, they did not kill him. The Rule of Kings works on and on and on. You can check it out. Again, what I say has to be checked. Just because Dr. Steve says it doesn't mean it's always correct. I do want you to understand it. So why do I bring up this point of Barvika? Because the first and most important lesson is that our presidents are continuously lying. It's an endless lies of lies upon lies, and they don't seem to understand that there is no reality check on them. Neither the Congress, nor the Senate, nor the investigative bodies. It's a joke to talk about Feinstein investigating, as you've seen recently. It's a joke about asking Thomas Pickering to investigate Benghazi. I'm very disappointed, as you know from my previous logs, because I had a great respect, but I have very little respect for him now. It's a joke to talk about Mark Levin. It's a joke to talk about the Senate, as you've seen. And it's certainly a joke to talk about Obama having any sense of propriety, truth, or transparency. Remember, he comes from the Chicago mob, from the daily machinery. So secondly, what we see is not only do we have an endless array of liars, sociopaths, that's not my diagnosis, it's really their own identity, starting with Slick Willie, and then we get Bush Jr., who really was the dumbest of all the three, and then we have now one of the slickest sociopaths, and that's Obama. He first tells us about Osama bin Laden and how he killed him. That was a lie. Now he tells us about Gaddafi being killed. That was a lie. And then he's going to tell you about Bashar Assad and how a dictator was eliminated. And probably he won't tell you that it was his White House that initiated the attacks and that he ordered the supply of CIA guns, paramilitary weapons, RPGs, and heavy artillery to get rid of a man who really didn't create any major problem and was not a national security issue to the United States. In the meantime, 100,000 refugees have gone and thousands of people have been injured and killed. Obama, though, has been exceedingly good at what we call drone attacks. Unlike what Panetta said, Panetta, the most dysfunctional Secretary of Defense since Rumsfeld, and really a man who's really disgusting, I find, has created these drone attacks where you have paramilitary civilians from the CIA, men in their 40s, who control these drones right over Yemen and Pakistan and kill repeatedly hundreds, if not thousands, of innocent civilians in the name of targeting high-value targets. It does not work. It has not worked. It has alienated the Pakistanis, Yemenis, the Somalians, the Sudanese, and the Muslim world. We have done more to damage our relationship with the entire world thanks to Obama, thanks to Bush Jr., and thanks to Bill Clinton. Secondly, the most important reason why I bring this up is that there is no real check on our military, CIA, and civilians who are insisting repeatedly on wasting trillions of our dollars and using hundreds and thousands of our men and women, honorable men and women, as cannon fodder to pursue a war that does not really exist of terrorists. There are no terrorists. The 9/11 event was not a terrorist event. It was an inside job, as you all know by now. You think, thank Bush Jr., Cheney, Rumsfeld. If you want to pursue the perpetrators, then you take out the various people who initiated those terrorist attacks. The president, the White House, and many others. I don't espouse it because I have to be careful. But clearly, those of you in America understand very clearly that it was not Osama bin Laden. It was not the Saudis. It was not the Yemenis or Somalis or Saddam Hussein. Then what do we have here? We have a whole series of problems that we can't control anymore and that our country is in a vortex of spinning out of control, where the republic and the military and the industrial complex has held hostage our congressman, legislator, judicial system. So we, in fact, don't have one. The president is born of, as I said before, a child man of the CIA. His mother was CIA, his grandmother was CIA, his grandfather on his maternal side. So what do we have? We have a constant series of wars and incursions that have no relationship to our national security, have no relationship to our spending and wasting human lives, both American lives and countless of thousands and hundreds of thousands of innocent civilian lives overseas. So I want to end by thanking Vladimir Putin, the Prime Minister, former Prime Minister and President of the Soviet Union or Russia. You know, Russia is a very big country. I have great respect for the Russians, although I fought the Soviet Union. And I want to say to Putin that he, above all, understands how much trouble we really are in. And he has taken an entrepreneurial initiative to fund our wars, to provide our guns, to provide our artillery, to provide our intelligence, to provide our access, and to provide the bandages to heal us. And most importantly, the exit strategy and the narrative to keep our presidents in power. And what has he done by keeping our presidents in power? He has basically forced them to be indebted to him because he knows, like every FSB agent or KGB agent, how to keep his mouth silent. Unlike our drunken, dysfunctional CIA and military intelligence and SEAL units who have to open up their mouth for self-aggrandizement, he knows how to keep it quiet. And as quiet as he remains, the more indebted the United States becomes to him and the greater the liars we produce as presidents. So, Mr. and Mrs. America, I want you to think, what is it that our presidents really do and what is it really that our military does? They have become more and more a problem for the United States than a solution. Our national security interests are not in the Middle East. Israel is a strategic liability. Saudi Arabia is a strategic liability, as is many of the countries in the Middle East. We do not support democracy. We do not support anything that has to do with democracy. What we support is the military-industrial complex, the expansion of oil interests, which we have none now in the Middle East because we're now net exporters of oil and gas since we're now using fracking. So the real question becomes, Mr. and Mrs. America, when a young man or woman goes to war, what are they going to war for? Nothing. They're going to war to be injured, to be severely harmed, and for us to take care of them in a very poor situation like the Veterans Administration, which is nothing more than a hostile for cannon fodder run by men who should have been thrown out a long time ago, Chinseki. And the next question really becomes, do we really need a Spanish-speaking man whose parents were born in Cuba, Mark Rubio, or do we really need other sociopaths who come and create a narrative on the Democratic and Republic side, a Hillary Clinton who has more dead bodies associated with her, with more lies and betrayals than any other person? And the real question becomes, do we really need a president of the United States? My answer is no. I don't need a Congress. I don't need a Senate. And I don't even need the judicial body. They're all dysfunctional. So I go back to the warnings of George Washington, who said, be careful of the tyranny of the White House and the presidency. And I go back to the statements of Thomas Jefferson, that in every democracy, we must fight for our own freedoms. Thank you. Good luck. Good night. And have a wonderful year.